The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Wow, it's great to be here tonight. This is fantastic. And it's a Monday night, and I'm actually seeing Joey on a Monday, because Polizzi's not open on a Monday. Anyway, I want to introduce two sons of South Philadelphia. And these are the men responsible for this book that we're going to talk about tonight called Dinner at the Club. And first up, I want to talk about Joey. A lot of people wouldn't know when they meet him. He's really modest, very low-key, 12th and Dickinson all the way. He was kicked out of Catholic school. Am I right? He actually says it in the book, so yeah. There wasn't much research involved in that. We'll get into that in a little bit. So you went on to great acclaim after your first job, which was bussing tables at Mr. Martino's on East Passyunk. And that was great restaurant, a lot of fun. And it opened in East Passyunk way before East Passyunk became cool, I guess we could call it, right? Okay. Eight-time James Beard Award semifinalist, and you worked at some pretty famous kitchens, including Vetri, and you worked with a real crew at Vetri. You know, Mike Solomonov, Jim Burke, Chip Roman, Dionisio Jimenez. Then he opened Zeppoli in Collingswood, crossing the Delaware. And wins a ton of acclaim over there. And then 2.5 years ago, you did, I don't know, you opened this place called Polizzi Social Club. How many here are members of Polizzi? Wow. See, it's definitely closed tonight. All right. Who is not a member? Ah, okay, great. We'll get into that later, too. All right. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Now, seated next to him is Adam Araci, who I see has brought, I believe in Italian we call that mishpucha. Okay. Sorry. Adam makes a living as a food and travel writer for multiple publications, and he has a bundle of awards from the IACP and the Association of Food Journalists, and he and his brother also own the Green Isle Grocery. So he's on both sides of the food business here. And Adam also has a real distinction. He did a literary twofer this year, which most writers could only dream of this one, or actually maybe nightmare is the word that actually popped into my head. He co-wrote the Laurel Cookbook with Nick Elmy of Laurel. And that only came out about a month ago.
Yeah, three weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Wow, okay. So before we get started, I actually have to ask this, and I think maybe you want to be interested in this too. How did you juggle both books at the same time, seemingly?
Well, one thing about being a full-time freelance writer is that you have got to be incredibly organized and good at time management, and I am that. So when I took on these two projects, the publisher and my editor, they were a little bit hesitant about buying the Polizzi book because I had already committed to the Laurel book, and my editor said to me, "Are you sure that you can do these two books at once? You know, Laurel's your first book. Can you take on Polizzi?" And I said, "Yeah, of course, like no problem." And you know, I didn't feel that inside, but of course I just said yes because I'm a freelancer. I say, you know, yes to everything, but it worked out. It was great. I mean, I had two great, you know, chef partners on the books, stayed organized, stayed on schedule, and just put my head down and kept working. And then you look up, and one day everything's done.
Wow. Yeah. What are you doing next?
I've got another book that I wrote or worked on called Philadelphia Chef's Table.
Okay.
It's an update of an existing book that came out about 8 years ago. So I went through that book and kind of scrubbed out all the restaurants that have closed, many that you would recognize, and we added about 15 to 20 new restaurants and recipes representing kind of the new wave of what's going on in Philadelphia dining now, and that comes out this spring.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, now for the man here, Joey. How did this whole thing, let's back up a little bit before the book, how did Polizzi come about? I mean, I know that this is a family story, it's a very deeply personal story for you. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, so the club was founded in 1918 by a group of about 10 men from the town of Vasto, which is a very small town in Abruzzo, a region in southern Italy. And they came here to the New World to kind of build a life for themselves. And they created this society to help each other, help their community assimilate into the American culture. So that's what how it was really founded back in 1918.
Okay, so they got a row house and just set it up as sort of a social club.
Yeah, so they have a bylaws and a charter.
Okay.
Which they would just kind of, you know, meet there. It was like a little meeting place for them to kind of talk about politics and the community and eat and drink and just enjoy their families. And so that's how it really started.
Okay.
Over the years, as the Italians stopped coming from the town of Vasto, they expanded it to all of Abruzzo. And then they expanded it again to all of southern Italy. So by the time my uncle took it over in the 70s, it was only for all of Italians. And when I took it over, I had the ability to change some of the bylaws and create the club so that everybody could kind of enjoy the experience of what I grew up with in my culture. So I had that ability to kind of change it and have it accessible to everyone,
okay.
Make it more inclusive.
But you already owned a restaurant in Jersey, and we all know that running a restaurant, chef owner, is a demanding job.
Mm-hmm.
Did it take some persuading to get you to take over Polizzi?
It did. It did until I went back into the club and I saw all the artifacts and how much it meant to these guys that came over here to make themselves a better life. When I saw the love and the passion that they had for the club and to become Americans, I felt like it was an obligation for me to continue this legacy. I didn't want to let it die. So it's a labor of love for me. And that's how I kind of just jumped into it. I wanted to recreate something and continue the legacy.
Okay. Now, you didn't just slap a coat of paint and dust the shelves
no.
off. And
So and when I took it over, the building was kind of falling apart a bit. So new plumbing needed to be done, new electric needed to be done. But everything that's in there has been in there since 1918. From the, you know, the bar, the old cigarette machine. My cousins, they're out there somewhere. They help me paint
okay.
and clean up the floor. My dad and my uncle and, you know, my whole family. It was a family effort to bring this place back to life, back to what it was.
Okay. So I hear there was a hole in the kitchen floor?
There was. My uncle actually fell through the hole into the basement, and I think he broke his leg or broke his foot or something like that. That's just how the story goes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So back then, what kind of food did they serve?
They served a lot of roast pork sandwiches, a Frito Misto, which we have in the book, a lot of fried mm-hmm. fish. They had a barbecue in the grill. They would grill sausages. And so a lot of the items that I have in the book are items that they would eat there, and then also items from both of our growings up in the neighborhood, like the calamari and peas and things that we eat at home.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it's actually a good time to talk about it. Like, how much influence did you have on the recipes used in the book?
So I didn't have influence on the recipes per se. You know, the recipes really come from Joey and his family, both what he makes at the club, some dishes from Zeppoli that, you know, we both love, and
yes,
dishes that we both love from Zeppoli, and then some other things that we kind of developed as specials to fill in the pages. What was interesting about developing the list or the selection of dishes that went into the book was that there were so many things that Joey and I both had growing up, you know, but just with small tweaks on, my mom does it like this, my grandmother does it like this.
Right.
So we had like a lot of those same shared experiences. It's like growing up in South Philly, we speak the same language in terms of food, but there's just these little differences, kind of how each family does their own thing.
How did you decide who's to use?
Well, I mean, I defer to, to the expert.
Right,
I mean,
okay. I don't know. That's, okay.
But
all
that was one of the main reasons why I chose Adam as my co-author, is because we share the same culture and we've had the same life experiences as far as eating, and we're from different parishes, but
we different size of Broad Street,
different neighborhoods,
very, very big.
Oh, okay.
So, but I chose him because he really understands, and I feel like he articulated really well in the book of what the neighborhood is and how we grew up, and I really want to share that with everyone, not just Italian Americans.
Okay, so let's get back to the club for just a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Tell me about a night at the club. What's it like?
A night at the club. A night at the club. Well, we have one guy here tonight that's at the club from start to finish. He's Russ. He's right there. Russ is one of my regular customers. He comes in, so he could probably tell you better than I could because he's there more than I am. Okay. He comes in first person, and he's sometimes the last to leave. So, but what we see there is we see a whole slew of different people. So in the beginning of the night, the 6 o'clock crowd, we have a little bit older, a little bit more affluent type people. I call them my Zeppoli crowd because it's a lot of my Zeppoli customers that come over from Jersey.
Okay.
And then at around 8 o'clock, we get people around my age. You know, they have young kids at home, maybe a babysitter. And then by the time 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock rolls around, we get the hipster crowd. And then at 2, we get the my chef friends that are just getting off work. So a night at the club is so diverse. It starts with one type and then ends with another. So it's a lot of fun. It okay. really is.
So they have to, and for those who haven't been there, you go up, you wait for the red light to be on.
The red light gets turned on at 6 p.m.
That tells you that they're open. And then you go up to the door, you knock on the door, the peephole slides open, and then you're asked for your you know, your membership card, of course, because by law, one member is allowed to bring in three guests.
Three.
So, mm-hmm. and they're strict about it because the LCB, you know, if you serve non-members, you can get fined or eventually shut down.
That's
but
correct.
While you're waiting, and there's an ante room that's probably 3 feet from the outer door to the inner door, and they're the house rules. And let me read them for you. And this is laid out in the book, too. And it's actually very civil. I really like this. It says, members only and cash only, and there's an ATM in there. No loud, obnoxious behavior. Proper attire required. Gentlemen must remove hats, and no flip-flops or sweatpants are allowed. Do not linger outside the front stoop. Smokers can use the backyard. What happens a policey stays a policey. No pictures, old eyes here, or excessive cell phone use. No blogging, reviewing, or tagging on social media.
That's right.
Okay. Each member may bring three non-members. A membership does not guarantee entry. And
if we're busy. Some people think that just because you have a membership means you could automatically get in, but that's not the case. If we're at capacity, we're at capacity, and there's nothing that really we could do about that.
Okay. Exit briskly and silently. Our neighbors are sleeping next door.
That's right.
Eat a lot, drink more, and mostly be social.
Yeah.
So did this, when did this occur to you to have to post these?
Well, before there was social media, there were these social clubs, and I feel like people use them to get together and talk and build a community, right? So I feel like the whole cell phone use there is because I want you to turn your phone off for a second and talk to the your neighbor next to you and talk to the person that you're with and engage and be social while you're in there. I think that's the whole point of the club. So all those rules have a meaning to them. And I felt like it was important to hang them up as soon as you walk in so people could see it. And if you don't abide by them, we've had people that we had to unfortunately take their memberships away. So,
oh, that has happened?
Yes.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay. As for no reviewers, you've been reviewed by the major publications. Was that, what was your take on that?
So I've been reviewed by one major publication and he got banned. The other guy, I won't mention the names
he wasn't LaBand, was he?
No.
I made a deal
with LaBand.
Since we're speaking.
I allowed him to come in and talk about the club, but it couldn't be a review. So if you ever notice, whenever he mentions the Palizzi Club, there's no stars, there's no bells, there's no whatever. He never gave me an actual review. You could talk about it, but don't review it.
Okay, that's fair enough. All right.
And the reason is because these recipes that are in these books are special to me, and they're special to my family, and I don't need anybody reviewing them. I don't.
Okay.
My mom reviews them when she comes in. Where is she at? There she is.
Wow, that's great. Okay. All right, let's talk about the food. Now, unlike the other cookbook that you wrote this year...
A little bit different.
Just for the uninitiated, I mean, Nick Elmy's cookbook is wonderful. It's full of wonderful recipes, but it's a little bit more on the scale of difficulty, it's pretty high.
It's very different, and that's one of the reasons why it was so exciting to work on these books at the same time, even though I didn't intend to work on them at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
You know, Nick's book is geared more toward professional chefs. There's a lot more involved recipes, whereas this book, I mean, anybody can just pick it up and cook something from it. And that's not to say all the recipes are super easy, because I think we... presented a variety of recipes, things that are super simple to make, and other things that do take a little bit of time, mm-hmm. and you know, a little bit more attention. But that being said, I mean, the Palizzi book is really, really a joy to cook from, I think.
Yeah, it looks like it's extremely accessible. I mean, the stuffed peppers. I love the calamari and peas. I mean,
yeah.
Tell me about the peas. I mean, people are going to get
a
kick out of this.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. That's one of those dishes that just brings back my childhood and things that, you know, probably my favorite pasta dish that my mom makes. So this is her recipe, and she uses canned peas. And we tell the reader in there's nothing wrong with canned peas. Like, the flavor is really good, the juice that's in there, and it makes the dish better. I've tried it with the fresh peas where you're standing there for 3 hours and you're trying to pop them. The flavor is different. So don't be scared to try things in a can, I feel like. If it's good quality, it's going to come out good.
Okay. So walk me through a couple of the recipes that you really like. Are there... want the book?
The stromboli is one of my favorite recipes. If you guys want to make some fresh dough, it's really pretty simple. Fresh yeast, flour, water, and then roll it out, put some pepperoni and mozzarella cheese in there, and that's something that we would have on Friday nights at my house. The things that are really special to me in that book are the... recipes that we have during celebration times. Like, there's a little section of the seven fish dinner, which
awesome.
Is really great. And then my Aunt Roma's Easter bread, which is in there. And the Easter ham pie, which is also great. So, I would say those three are...
Those two of those are a great example of what I had mentioned earlier about how we both have these dishes our families make, but they're different. Both the ham pie for Easter and the Easter bread... something that my grandmother would make as well. But the way that they would do it, the dough is totally different. The texture is totally different. The shape of the pie is different. So we understand that these are like the same thing, but just done in different ways.
Where were you doing the recipe testing for the book? Did you do it at Polizzi?
I had me and my sous chef actually did it, and we did not. We did it from our home kitchens.
Really?
Because I want these recipes to come out for you guys in your home, whether you live in a large house or a small apartment. We want it to, the equipment that we have at the restaurant is heavy duty commercial, right?
Sure.
So I wanted it to, these recipes to really come through, if even if you're living in a small apartment. So we tried it in small little ovens at home.
You mean like gas and electric?
Because gas.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Interesting. Now the I find this is probably the first time I've ever seen this in a book, the Pizzazz Pizza.
Yeah.
Which, tell me about that. That's a fascinating story about
the history.
So
I think Adam has a lot more history about the Pizzazz than I do, but this is another thing that, like, on Friday nights, when my mom really didn't want to cook, she would just make pizza. And one of these was the tomato one and the Pizzazz. And it was just something that is in our blood because we're from down here and this is what we eat. But Adam, if you want
to. Yeah, when we were talking about pizza recipes, we knew we wanted to have a second one in addition to the tomato pie.
Right.
And, you know, tomato pie, you get that at any bakery in South Philly. And we were brainstorming on what another one could be. And just one day we're like, oh, we have to do Pizzazz. Like, how could we not? And I know when I have, like, friends who come in from out of town, like people who write about food, and they're like, oh, what should we get? Like, what's the Philly thing to get? And I was like, oh, we should go get Pizzazz Pizza.
Can you explain what the Pizzazz Pizza
of course.
Is? This is like, we're talking about Italians from South Philadelphia,
yeah.
And what's on this pizza?
It's going to sound a little weird. So
yeah. So what Pizzazz Pizza is, it's fresh sliced tomato, it's pickled banana peppers, the rings, and it's American cheese. So, yeah, don't laugh. It's great. It's so good. So, which was cool in that kind of putting it in the book, we had to do like a little bit of research on what the history of it.
Sure.
And it's kind of generally agreed upon that even though you can go to most bakeries or pizza shops in South Philly, and if you order Pizzazz, they're going to know what you mean, that Celebrezze is kind of where it originated, I believe in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
And the backstory that I got from the owner of Celebrezze now is that the founder's brother had a boat called Pizzazz, and he loved grilled cheese, and he was kind of playing around one day, messing around with pizzas for staff meals, and he wanted to make like a grilled cheese pizza, so he put American cheese on the pizza, and then I think it was like maybe tomatoes and onions, and they took the onions off, and they put the hot peppers, and the staff just kind of freaked out about it, and then it made it onto the menu, and it's been there ever since. And that's somewhere that I grew up going as a kid, Friday nights to Celebrezze.
So do pizza purists like completely lose it when you describe this to them?
I think they're a little confused. I mean, the idea of putting American cheese on pizza is kind of weird, but I mean, American cheese is great. Like, I love American cheese.
Yeah, okay.
That's the only thing I want on a burger. It's the best.
Well, yeah, a burger was one thing, but pizza, I don't know. It's a, okay.
Don't
I know, I've had it. I like it. It actually works
really well.
It like gets brown and bubbly like the way
sure.
other cheese don't.
Yeah, and it browns great. Up and yeah, mm-hmm. I got it. Yeah. Okay. I also like in the book how you describe there's certain methods and certain ingredients that you really have to use. Like, you're really obsessed with the Cecco pasta. Mm-hmm. What's the appeal there?
It was just something that I'm just so used to. I don't like any other dried pasta than the Cecco.
All right.
So
okay.
It's almost like it's not like it's a superior necessarily. It's mm-hmm. just
what I'm used to.
Yeah, your taste memory. Yeah.
But there is a difference in salt, and you know, people use Morton's, the kosher salt, opposed to Diamond Crystal, and that is a big difference. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, a lot of the salt that we use in the book is sea salt, and which you could get at any Italian shop at the Italian market. Claudio's is where I usually get most of my stuff, but I just find that it has a cleaner taste than most, and I feel like the product comes out nicer with a better ingredient like the salt.
Yeah, that was our default salt for this book.
Default salt.
Yeah,
okay.
Default salt. And then, but we do call for kosher.
When you season the pasta water.
Yeah. And it is a big difference in the densities of Diamond Crystal versus Morton's, which is why we specify.
Right, got it, okay. Cocktails. Now, the cocktails that you serve at Polizzi and also in the book are probably not the same kinds of cocktails they would have served over,
no.
Or if they were serving cocktails at all.
Right.
How did the development, walk me through that. How did that happen for the restaurant and also for the book?
I wanted to create a well-rounded, balanced cocktail menu, and it was really important for me to name each cocktail after one of the founding fathers of the club.
Okay.
So if you see the Mezzarobo or the DiCicco, they're named after each president. So that was really important. I wanted to honor them in that way. But we tried to use as many kind of Italian spirits as we can, Campari, you know, all those Italian spirits. So we came up with, I feel like it was a real well-rounded eclectic mix of some cocktails. The Negroni is on there. The DiCicco is an olive oil washed vodka drink, which is really great. We have the Bozzelli, which is spicy, which is my personal favorite. Mm-hmm. I kind of like spicy cocktails, so I think they complement the food. So that was another thing that we tried to do. We tried to complement we started with the food menu, and then we tried to complement that menu with some more forward-looking cocktails.
Okay. So make us hungry. What do you think? What's the best sellers? What are the best sellers?
The best sellers are probably the ravioli. We only make about 18 per night, and they go pretty quick. Mm-hmm. The ravioli is stuffed with ricotta and spinach and an egg yolk and some brown butter and sage. That's probably one of the most popular. The escarole and beans is another most really popular dish.
Okay.
And all these recipes in the book, that they're so streamlined that you guys could all, you know, do it at home. And,
okay.
Yeah.
So. All right. So, favorite restaurants? I've got to ask the question.
Mr. Martino's, hand down.
Ah, there you go. Very. All right. I said restaurants, plural. Give me a couple of others.
I really like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Zahav and Vernick.
Okay. Adam?
In terms of Italian food, Zeppoli is, I think, the best.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's the best Italian restaurant in the whole region, in my opinion.
Okay.
Besides that, I love Zahav as well. I love what Nick does at Laurel and in the Valley. I go there kind of a lot. And then Hardina, I eat there a lot as well.
Okay.
Little Indonesian place,
food, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of, all right, that was Friday, Saturday, Sunday was a little on the fancier side. Anything ethnic-y?
I love the South Philly Barbacoa.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's amazing.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to throw this out to you guys if you want to ask some questions.
I've been trying to get a membership to Polizzi Social Club.
Wait, let me interrupt for 1 second.
This,
I knew this was going to come. We all knew this was going to come up.
I was hoping maybe being here tonight, I might get some. I mean, I'll pay for it. I don't want any freebies. But seriously, what does one have to do to get a membership?
So currently the memberships are not available, but I think every May, we're going to open it up to everyone. We did this past May, and it went over really well. So look out on our Instagram for a notice, and I think in May they'll be back for the month of May.
Yeah.
In the meantime, make a friend, and then you could be one of their members. You could be one of their friends.
Yeah, just to explain why you can't just – it's not like the government printing money. It's
exactly.
Well, it's called inflation, but how do you cap it? Well, why do you cap it?
I cap it to preserve our ability to make people happy. Like, that is my goal there. I want to make all of our members as happy as they can be and as comfortable as they can be. If I have 1 million people trying to get in, the food's going to suffer, the service is going to suffer. So I feel like to have a small knit group of members, it just overall, it'll make the better experience for the folks, for the members.
And once you're inside too, I mean, I think that's so true. Like, you might go to the door and be told, you know, you have to wait an hour, or we'll text you when a table is ready or right. seats ready. But once you get in and that curtain parts, it feels like it's your place. And it never feels overcrowded or like you can't move. I think that's one of the smartest things that you guys do is manage that flow.
Yeah. I'm more interested in making people feel comfortable and having them have an enjoyable time than to pack it in.
So I love all the interesting things in the club, but I don't necessarily know their history. So I'm curious, are there one or two artifacts in the club that you really like, and what's the history or the significance to you?
That's a good question. There's so many. I have ledgers that go back to even before they opened, when they were trying to figure out what they wanted to do there, and it's all written in Italian, so I had to get a translator to translate some of the things. And these guys came from a different world to a place where they didn't know the language, they didn't know the culture, so they were kind of lost. And some of the things in their writings is so meaningful, is because how are they going to take care of their wives and their children? And the social club kind of got them to come together. So reading those ledgers kind of is really special for me, which I hold dear. But the charter is another amazing artifact that's in there. So many different things we found behind the bar, pictures of different famous celebrities that were there at one time. We had local actor and boxers that signed their names, and we have it hanging on the wall. There's quite a few, and there's a bunch of pictures of some of them in there. The way they voted for presidents, they had ballots, and they took it very seriously. So, especially in this day and age with the whole immigrant thing, I feel like this is an American story, a story of Philadelphia. It's having people from a different culture come here and want to become American. And that's what this book is about.
How old is that cash register?
The cash, there's an old cash register from the 30s in there as well. Yeah,
Frank Rizzo on the wall.
Frank Rizzo there's on the wall.
Yeah. So you know you're in South Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Okay, he's, got it.
That picture's staying there.
Any other front row? Wait for the mic, please.
Can I introduce myself? My father was the first president, Cesare de la Brigata.
Wow.
Congratulations.
So you and Adam both talked about having like similar recipes that were like slightly different, and like, you know, everyone's known to mix it differently. How did you come to decide to like divulge those sort of family recipes? And like, I know that my grandmother would kill me if I ever wrote any of her recipes down and shared them with people. And like, how did you decide to do that and like weigh it against like having a restaurant and being able to share that food with the world?
That's a good question, and people ask me that too. A lot of my family members kind of said, are you going to tell them the whole recipe, or are you going to hold something back? But, you know, I wanted to honor these guys, her grandfather, her father, my uncle, my mom's cousin. I wanted to honor them, and by doing that, I wanted to make sure that these recipes came out true, and I didn't want to hold anything back. And it was important for me to make sure that when you buy the book and you make the recipe, it tastes the same way that it does at the club or at my house. So it was really important for me to give 100% the 100% full recipe. So.
Hi, I'm wondering if you still need a translator for any of that Abruzzese dialect, and my services for membership. Notice the necklace from Abruzzo? I'm 100% Abruzzese.
Okay. We got to get you one.
That's great.
So I'm Italian, and I eat Italian just at Zeppoli and Palizzi. For me, it's not just about the food, but it's about the experience. I feel like home every time I come to Palizzi. And I want to ask you, how difficult was it? It's not just about the food, it's about like the family you created there. From the servers, the busboy, the, you know, the bartender. How difficult or how easy it was to create, you know, that kind of atmosphere and a kind of restaurant?
The atmosphere was kind of there already with the floors and the bar, and I almost feel like I'm a curator over there. Like it was already there. A lot of it was there, and I just kind of want to continue what was already there. So it's not this preconceived concept that I had that I was planning on doing. It kind of fell into my lap, and when my uncle was sick and asked me to continue it on, it was something that was already existing. So it's something that you really can't recreate. I think it was just there, and I'm the curator for that right now.
The staff is really magical, yeah. Too.
The staff is unbelievable. And I feel like the energy, everybody knows, and the great thing about having a members-only restaurant is like everybody knows everybody. So it's kind of like this one big family. It's not like you get this one-time guy in there and he'll never show up again. You get many, many regulars, and we all become family.
I think a lot of the people have been there since you opened.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like only 2.5 years, but 2.5 years in the restaurant business is a long time. There's a lot of turnover, but not a Palizzi.
No.
Okay. Hi there. Joey, I live in near Collingswood, so I've been to your restaurant many times.
Great. It's
very
Thank
lovely.
You.
Thank Thanks. You. I have a question for Adam.
Oh, great.
So what qualifies you to write all these books, besides being a food expert?
I don't know.
Okay. I want this job.
What qualifies me to write all these books? You know, I'm a curious and nosy person, and I ask good questions, I think. I've been writing about food for over a decade, kind of always in this area. And I think that the privilege of being able to tell other people's stories, I mean, food is something that we all share. And food is never just about food. Restaurants are never just about restaurants, especially now more than ever. So I think being able to have passion and interest in telling those stories is kind of how I've been able to build a career doing this.
My question has a few assumptions, so forgive me if I'm off the mark. You are trying to honor all these old traditions and recipes and your family, and that's beautiful. And you also have some pretty excellent training with some awesome chefs, and you're a great chef. And I would think part of you, at least at times, wants to push the envelope, do fancy things, do new things. And I know you have another restaurant. I haven't been to either. I would like to come to both. Do you have to work to balance between fancy and pushing the envelope and keeping things traditional? And if so, can you talk about that a little bit?
The answer is no, because I'm not interested in cooking that type of food. That's not the type of chef that I am. I like to cook traditional things. The more traditional, the better. I always feel like if you could get a nice piece of crusty bread and mop up the sauce after, that's the type of food that I cook. So for me, that's not a challenge, because I cook what my mom cooks and her mom cooked. Yeah, so for me, it's pretty easy. That's the type of food that I like. For some chefs, they might try to add too much of this or that. And I think we talk about that in the book, how I like to keep it simple. And I'm kind of a purist in that sense. And that's the food that I like. So each chef is different. And for me, it's pretty straightforward.
Okay. I've been asked to ask this question. Would you ever consider, if he showed up with a signed copy of the book at the restaurant, not to get membership, but to at least have one shot at having dinner there, or possibly being put on that list before May.
I think that would work. Yeah. I think you could do that.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay. You got it.
Is this being recorded?
Oh, great.
Thank you.
Well, I began my career after I was a paper boy at Mr. Martino's, and that experience for me, I was 14 and a half, 13 and a half. So that experience really opened my eyes to not only the person that I wanted to be, but it opened my eyes to many different types of people that would come into the restaurant, and I saw how hard Mark and Maria worked, and I kind of respected that. And by the time I was done college, I went to Temple University. By the time I was done college, I knew that that was something that I wanted to do. So I think for the most part, they really inspired me to continue my career into what I'm doing today. But I think to be a chef, it has to be in your soul, because it's such a hard job. You know, there's heat, there's, you know, you're getting burnt, your staff isn't showing up. There's so many other things that's involved in being a chef than just getting the food onto the table. So if you're really not invested and don't love it 100%, you really can't be successful in doing that. So I that's what I love to do. I love to work, and I love to make people happy. And I think at the end of the day, putting a smile on people's faces through food is why I do what I do.
Thank you. Okay. Joe, you also grew up in the restaurant industry, in a way, at your grandparents' restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. But you were too young to work there. I remember.
I was too young. By the time I was old enough, the place had closed. But my mother's father and mother had a little bar and grill two doors down from the Palizzi Club. Yeah, right on the corner of 12th and Reed. The best time to show up is Sunday night after 8 p.m. But that's the best time, because it's at the slowest point. But if you try to get there and you want to eat early, try to get there at like 5:45 and wait until that neon sign goes on, and get there early.
How worried were you that the concept would take off? Okay, so it's a different concept. You're going to sell memberships. I'm going to sell them, and no one's going to buy them. Or what? Was that a concern at all?
It was a big concern. I had no clue what was going to happen. I was super nervous. I didn't think people would understand it. It's in the middle of a street in a small row home. It's kind of crazy. So that was a big concern of mine. Yeah.
Is it working?
It is.
I mean, it's remarkable. He opened a restaurant and automatically cut out like 95% of his clientele, potential clientele.
Pretty much. And, yeah. And it was done for legal reasons, because you have a club license, and by law you can't just open a restaurant.
Right.
So
everything that I do as far as taking membership, it's a very rigorous legal thing that I have to go through and check each member and vet them pretty well. So it takes a while.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't know. They think, oh, we'll just buy a membership, right. And
yeah, that's not,
you know, it's not the case. Okay.
How do you divide your time between your two restaurants?
That's a good question. Mike had asked me that before we went on, and it's difficult, but I'm lucky, like Russ had said, I have a great team, and so I rely on all my guys to execute the vision that I have. But I start my day in New Jersey, then I go back to Philadelphia and do some things. I buy the produce in the morning for both places, make sure everybody's doing the right thing, and then head back to New Jersey, and then finish in Philly.
Okay, so Palizzi's open 4 days?
Palizzi is open Thursday through Sunday, yeah.
Right, and then
Zeppoli's open
every day but Tuesday.
So yeah, that's your life is just the clock. Yeah. Yep. Okay, it's tough. Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. This is a lot
of fun.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.